especially how you're sitting right now. What is your posture like? We have just a very superficial look at how we're sitting. And then we get more specific. So I start by looking at my legs. Not with my eyes, with my mind. I send awareness. I contact the feelings in the legs, like giving them a call on your phone. Hey legs, how are things down there? And when you start to develop awareness, you start to feel and start to know that your legs might need some adjustment. Mine do. So I'm now going to adjust the posture of my legs. Once I've adjusted the legs, they feel good. Just keep on looking at them, just checking. The awareness, the mindfulness gives me feedback. And the kindness, the wisdom. I know how to adjust those legs. And after adjusting them, check again. Is that good? Does that feel comfortable? Once they do feel comfortable, then I can move up to my buttocks. And sometimes you get sore bottom. Sometimes, because the buttocks are not properly adjusted onto the seat, it means that you get pins and needles, or as they say, your leg goes to sleep, which is uncomfortable. It's not life-threatening, but nevertheless, if you get your bottom in a good position to begin with, fidget it, check if that's better, fidget again, find the best posture by feedback and kindness. Move up to the back, stretching the back if you wish, moving it, relaxing it, until your mindfulness, your awareness of the feelings in your own back, really be aware of them, until that they adjust themselves and your back feels comfortable. It's not just your posture which is always the same. Because things are always changing. Sometimes my back posture is one way, sometimes another way. Whichever I feel is the most comfortable. The most comfortable is always changing. Once my back feels good, my shoulders, making sure they're really relaxed. Adjusting my robe so it's not too tight on the top shoulder. And you're aware of your body, you know what is tense, you can recognize what is relaxed. That's what mindfulness does. It gets to know things, how your body feels. And then you realize just how to relax, how to let go of both ends, which causes stretching, so that the muscles are just really loose. Feel good. And then check my hands, place which often you fidget because it's not comfortable there. Once it's comfortable, at ease, it doesn't need to move. It's happiness, comfort, is the cause of stillness, not moving, not needing to move. It's the same with the mind. When the mind is comfortable later on, it doesn't need to move into past or future or escape into thoughts. So my hands are really nice and comfortable resting down there. I know I can just leave them alone. It's like locking up the car, alarm on, all valuables taken away, so you can park your car, you don't have to worry about it. It's like parking my hands. Comfortable, no problem down there, so I can now forget them. I go up into my neck, making sure that's comfortable. Any irritations in the throat? You can cough if you need to, but also you can just learn how to soothe your own throat just by noticing the sensations and learning how to relax them. Up to the head, muscles around the eyes and the mouth, feeling them, relaxing them. Until your whole body feels at ease, not a tight spot anywhere. If there is something which is still tight, aching, inflamed, even pain, inside the body, which hasn't released or relaxed yet, just go right to it. Feel it with your mind. Be as mindful, aware of it as you possibly can. And once you're aware of that, you get the ability to see things changing, feedback, according to your attitudes, the way you look at it, what you give to that feeling. If you give it peace, letting be, opening the door of your heart to that feeling, sometimes you can feel it relax. The ache, the pain, the tension become less. You're learning. You're learning how to have a deep ache or pain inside of you, and learning how to relax it through mindfulness and kindness. And when you your body does get really deeply relaxed, just notice the joy, the delight of a relaxed body. It's a special type of pleasure. It's not stimulating pleasure, it's a pleasure of deep comfort, a cozy form of pleasure. Everything feels good in your body because you've relaxed it with kindness. And then you move your attention to your mind, emotional world, the inner world. And how peaceful are you? This is where I introduce the concept of peaceometer. Give it a number from 1 to 10. How peaceful are you? How anxious, irritated are you? Just get to know this peaceometer. The more you look, the more you understand it. And when you really recognize this peaceometer, as much as you can notice how hot or how cold you are, when you know that peaceometer so well, you know what agitates it, what just makes you more anxious and irritated, and you also know what relaxes you. Letting go of the past and future relaxes you. Moves the needle of the peaceometer closer and closer to one. Even past 1 to 0. That's really cool. Getting angry, complaining, fault finding, controlling, negative. That just moves your needle of your peaceometer up to 9 to 10 or even more. Letting go, let it be, and you become peaceful. When you do get some peace in your emotional world, letting go of the past and the future in this moment, just being here, see if you can recognize how joyful, how liberating, how comfortable the present moment can be. It's listening to the bird. Listening to the hum of the aircon. Listening, being with life as it happens. Just being. As your peaceometer, the needle goes closer and closer to one. Once you've established enough peace, you only know what I mean by that. You can automatically turn on to your breathing. Is anything moving? If you go onto the breath too fast, it becomes agitated and difficult to follow. If you go too slow, maybe you might fall asleep because nothing to really anchor you. So just start to be aware of your breathing. And as you breathe in, naturally, not forced, as if you're watching somebody else's breath, you breathe in peace. You breathe out, let go. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. be quiet till the end of the meditation. close to the end of the meditation now. How do you feel? How relaxed is your body? And why? How peaceful is the mind? What does peace feel like? Did you experience delight, special happiness of a relaxed body, a peaceful mind? We will now ring the gong 3 times to end the meditation. Okay, there we go. So usually at this point we have some questions from overseas. Today 2 from Poland, 1 from Germany. How much of alertness should there be? If I'm trying to be aware and alert, my mind is not slowing down. When I lose my alertness, I'm falling into a strange state, close to sleep. This is a common sort of stage in meditation of people realizing that they are tired, the older sleep deficit, and number 2, it is a problem that people are only aware of exciting things, so that when they go into a state which is peaceful, they can't recognize, and so the mind tends to not see anything. It is the usual simile, which is the most accurate I've come across, is when you're in a lit room and you go out into the darkness, and in the darkness there you can't really see your surroundings until the time comes when the pupils start to dilate and they can see where you are. So what is happening here? Don't try to be aware and alert. That is counterproductive. What is happening is that the mind is stopping the alertness, the awareness, by trying, by doing it. For those of you who have been here before, you may know that 2 parts of the human mind is a very useful way of understanding what is going on. The doer and the knower. If you do, you try, it means you're taking energy away from alertness, from mindfulness. You think you are creating more alertness, but it is a fake alertness which cannot be maintained for long. It's just too stressful, too tight. But if you do have the courage to not try, just to be, trying is looking for something in the future to achieve. Being is staying in the present moment. Yes, at first, sometimes people do, like going out into the darkness, can't see where they are. They think that is darkness. Just stay there. Don't do anything. And then what happens is that your mind starts to get energized, starts to charge up. You're not losing energy by doing things. You're allowing the energy to go into knowing, into mindfulness. So if you lose your alertness, you're not losing your alertness. You feel you're falling into a strange state, close to sleep. That's because you've been trying. Stay there. And if you stay in that state, you're still conscious. Ask yourself, what are you conscious of? What are you aware of? It's like in the dark night, to stay there, and you soon get your night vision. Your awareness becomes more sensitive, so you can see things which are far more refined. You are refining your alertness, your awareness, on more difficult subjects. Sometimes in meditation I say it's just like, you know, whenever you get a trade or whenever you do a subject at school or university, yeah, you get the easy test comes first, and then they test you a little bit further, harder exam, and then a little bit harder to see how you can get trained and trained and trained and trained. It's the same with here. Yes, you let go, and it's a harder exam to be aware of what happens when you're not doing this usual course sort of awareness. And this is the way you get peaceful and deep and happy. You only get to get to the happy state. And then that means that you're not asleep anymore. High mindfulness equals high happiness. That's how we know that your mindfulness is really getting somewhere, because you have joy with it. And from Germany, what is the best method to meditate if the dog is sick and you don't know if she will make it the next week? How to get peace and strength for her, and how to give her that peace? It's again just... You don't know if the dog will make it the next week, but you don't know if the dog won't make it next week. In other words, we think, oh, the dog's going to die. But then what happens if the dog doesn't die? So the future is so uncertain. And if you expect something to happen, you will make it happen. If you don't expect it to happen, have a really open mind, free mind, who knows? I have known many human beings, and dogs as well, who have surprised everybody. Just that funeral service we did 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago for Judy, there was her dog who was taken to the vet. And the vet said have to euthanize it to kill it because it had bad cancer. And what she did, she looked into the dog's eyes, followed my advice, looked in the dog's eyes, do you want to go yet? Are you ready to die? It's a dog's call. Because, you know, that you know, you've been with that animal for a long time, you love it. You can communicate with it, look into its eyes, you know what it wants. And her dog said, no, I'm not ready to go yet. So she went back to the vet and said, no, I'm taking my dog home. And the veterinary surgeon really scolded her. She knew she was a Buddhist, stupid, uncompassionate Buddhist. And then Judy eventually took her dog back 6 months later. Full of recovery. You don't know what's going to happen. So, if you are, as I said at the beginning, snoopy, if you worry about the bad thing which might happen to your dog, thinking it might die in a week, it means you're not enjoying her presence now. You can't really have fun and love the dog when you're so afraid of what it might happen. So that's how to give yourself peace. You give yourself peace, give the dog peace. Okay. If you die, we're going to have a wonderful week before you go. And from Poland, how can I help my brother-in-law who's in critical condition at the hospital by means of meditation? How can I help my sister as well? Okay, critical condition at hospital. Critical means we look at negative. That's what critic means. You're criticizing her condition. Critical, fault-finding. I'm just looking at it another way. So, why not be fault-finding? They're in hospital. They might die, they might live. And if they die, if they're a good person, wow, they're out of here. If they're a good person, this is from Poland. You know, if they're not a Catholic, they must be a Buddhist. They believe in life after death. So, what happens means, you know, that, well, what's wrong with dying? You have died many times, Buddhists. And that's why I said that you are all born again Buddhists. Not the first time you've died. I think we forget it. So, how do you help your brother in law who's in critical condition at the hospital? Don't criticize their critical condition. Don't stigmatize dying. Embrace. Let it be. See. But this is part of our life, and it's not whether they die or they survive. It's how they die or how they survive. That's the most important thing. So if you survive, survive well. Not at any cost. And if you die, die well. Peacefully. It's part of the life. What's wrong? What's wrong with dying? Okay, anyway. So, you know, you have your nice little, what's it called? The coffins, the caskets. Now, they're so, I've seen those, beautiful satin and nice and cozy and peaceful, you can really stretch out. You know, there's so many people, you know, dying to get into those caskets. Okay, just a silly joke. But you know, it's interesting, what happens in Thailand, they have these little ceremonies which at first you can make fun of, but actually there's something which is quite nice about them. You know, that you know, you're fully alive, awake, and you have these coffins, you go and lay down in them. And the monks do the chanting. They do the chanting of the funeral chanting. And then you pretend to be dead. And then they do the getting better chanting. And then you pretend to be alive again. Just, it's almost like a practicing of getting really close to what dying actually is. You pretend, you know, you're in a casket, in a proper coffin. Monks do all the chanting and the rigmarole, except they don't do the cremation or the burial. That's what they don't do. Everything else but. And then they do some other chanting, and as you come out afterwards, it just, you know, why are we just so worried about stuff? We're going to die anyway. So what it does, it gives you a wonderful example of how to let go. Sometimes in Thailand, these days, it's like just letting go of all your bad karma. But what it really is, it is just understanding why we're worried about so much. We're all going to die, so we can just let it go. So that's, he's in critical condition of the hospital. By means of meditation, oh, you can just let him be, just give him permission. If he needs to go, he has to go. If he wants to get better, can get better. But you love him whichever way it goes. Just like my father said, the door of my heart's open to you, no matter what. Give him unconditional awareness, unconditional love. To make that point, I know you've heard me say this so often, it's not just joke. Sometimes when I do go traveling, they say, have a good flight. And I say, no, I'm not following your orders. That's not love, that's control. Like going to someone who's sick in hospital, oh, I hope you get better. That puts pressure on them again to fulfill your hopes about them and to meet their requirements. That's not how you love someone in hospital. You just say, whatever happens, the door of my heart's open to you. Take away the control, the pressure, the want to live up to other people's expectations. So if your brother-in-law who's in critical condition in the hospital, just explain to him what real freedom is, what love is. If you die, that's fine. But die well. If you survive, that's fine. Survive well. No pressure. No trying to live up to somebody else or society's expectations. Don't put pressure on them when they're in hospital to get better. Otherwise you are letting me down. Stay with me. Look in the eyes. Stay with me. Stay with me. Stay with me. If someone did that when I was critically injured, they'd say, get out of here. This is not, I'm not going to follow what you say. Stay with me. I'm going to go if I want to go. None of your business. So anyway, get some idea of the mistakes human beings make. So that's how you can help your sister as well. It depends on how critical he is. But don't criticize being in a critical situation. It's part of life. And you're fearful because of attachment. Fear is always a sign that something you're attached to is being taken away from you. But if you realize that you're only visiting people, you're together for a while, then we depart from one another, then we come back again, then we depart again. That's just our life. So we have a wonderful time when we're together, and we love each other so much we don't sort of control one another, we forgive one another.
And when the person does lies, we forgive that too. Lie with my blessing. You don't have to get better. You can die if you wish. I will miss you, of course, but I will not lose you, because I've had you for all these times. That's not a loss, it's a gain, having known you. Okay, so any questions from the floor? Or not just from the floor, I should also include the chairs. Any questions from the chairs as well, and from the stools and from the cushions? Anything? Going. Gone. Yay. Okay. So let's post-best of Buddha Dhamma Sangha. It's 4:15. Yay. Whoops.